Child parent relationships are unlike any other, aren't they? They really are. But what happens if you don't meet your parent or your parents until you are already an adult? A difficult situation for many, I presume. Psychotherapist Coleman Nochter joins me now to talk about just some of the issues that can arise for people facing that exact situation. Coleman, good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks, Jen. Yeah, not a bother.
Good to have you on.
Like yourself, trying to train a new pup here at the moment. So it's all shoulders to the wheel here.
Listen, it's like having a newborn in the house. It's just it's
a toddler with teeth, I think, is probably the best way.
Yeah, go on. You have to tell me the name of the dog now. What have you got?
Golden Retriever, Cooper is his name. And I've gone from night feeds to night wheeze at the moment. So it's around the clock.
Are you crate training, Coleman?
I am. Yeah. He's just at night time. Yeah, he's doing the crate at night.
He's doing the crate at night. Okay.
Yeah, but
tough going.
He's brilliant.
Tough going.
Like, he's fantastic. But a child was easier, I think.
It was. It was. I know. I'm in it. The same as yourself. Cooper, what
Sorry,
a great name. Cooper, what a great name. I know. This is what happens. Okay, Coleman, let's talk about this. Because as I said there in the intro, child-parent relationships, they are unlike any other. And it can be tricky if you only get to meet your parent later on in life. What are the problems that arise? I mean, I'm sure every person is different when they're in that situation, right?
Yeah, it's a hugely unique circumstances because I've seen lots of people clinically who've been adopted, and some have an incredibly strong itch that they need to scratch and they need to find out who their parents are. Others are utterly disinterested in ever doing that. They're perfectly happy with the family that they have and don't want to disrupt that. And I think it's absolutely fine to take either approach. But from the point of view of, like, when you are going to meet someone, a lot of it's down to your own lens of understanding, whether you've been very empathetic to your biological parent and whatever story you've been told, you understand it from that kind of view. And so you go into it with great deal of hope and expectation. Other people, it's maybe just a question of, I just want to see who they are, but I don't really want to create a relationship with this person. But there's huge amounts of complexity with your own adoptive family as well, because they can see it as, you know, maybe you ousting them, or, you know, not being grateful for the upbringing that you've had. And so oftentimes you're getting it from all sides. It's a very complex situation.
It is a complex situation. And not just with adoption. It can be a situation of growing up with one parent for a lot of people. Would you say a lot of it is to do with the child, inverted commas, the identity? I know I heard an interview with Joanne McNally recently, and she said she just wanted to find, because she was adopted, someone that looked like her. She wanted, you know, and that was very much the reason for her seeking out her parents, was for her own identity. Is that a reason why a lot of people want to meet their birth parents?
Yeah, there's a term, genetic bewilderment. It's like when you don't know where you come from, and it can be really difficult for people. I know some people who kind of walking through the streets, and maybe they've never known their dad, but every man within an age group, they're wondering, is that him? Or, you know, and so it can be really preoccupying from that point of view. Other people want to know it from biological markers, you know, in terms of, you know, was there anything in family history that I'm missing out on in terms of illnesses or conditions and things like that? So there's lots of different variations of it. But again, I think it's so individual. There are some who, as I say, are really committed to trying to find that, or are really bothered by the fact that they don't have that. Mm. But I'm always really surprised by people who just don't have that desire to know. And it's really...
That's more fascinating, I would say.
It is, because, and I've oftentimes maybe in my own kind of pathologized that and saying, is that a real kind of sense of avoidance or something like that? But maybe I've come around to thinking that, you know, some people are just, they just are okay with not knowing something. And, you know, oftentimes we talk about resilience. Resilience is not about making life certain. It's about coping with uncertainty. And some people are just very good with not knowing, and others are not. But from the point of view, I absolutely understand it from both sides. I would see it as, you know, someone who almost has a pilgrimage to try and find out who this person is. I get that. But also, I think we need to accept people who maybe don't have that, and actually that's okay too.
Let's talk about the people who want that for their own identity, or they want a connection for whatever their reason is. What would you say is very important for them to consider? Like, for example, they should really probably manage expectations, right?
100%. Okay. I mean, again, any interaction that involves two people, you're only in control of 50% of that, which is your own reaction to it. And you know, some, you might come into it with a great deal of enthusiasm and it's exciting. You don't know to what degree the other person's life has been upheaved by this, by you coming into their lives. And so there's a lot of times, I think a lot of people have a high expectation that it's going to be this wonderful kind of relationship, and it turns out not to be, and there can be a disappointment around that. But oftentimes you can go into it, you know, with a belief of empathy that everything's going to be okay. And when you actually meet that person, you find that the anger and the frustration and the annoyance comes through in waves that you didn't expect. Do you know what I mean? So from the point of view of it can oftentimes pick at a scab that's there for quite some time and can unleash some of the uncomfortable experiences that you might have. But it's really about saying this is an encounter, and not have an expectation that it will develop into anything. If it does, fantastic and very good. But when you rely on the other person to, you know, engage in a relationship, you're oftentimes better to manage your expectations of that rather than have them very high going into it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I suspect you need to be in a very good place yourself before you make that decision, because I suspect that empathy would play a big role in trying to understand, for whatever reason, a parent decided not to raise you as a child. So I presume you would have to be in a very good place personally in order to make that step.
Yeah, I don't even know if there's such a thing as that good a place. I mean, this will always be difficult. Like, the concept of rejection, Jen, is essentially, it relates to our own sense of enoughness. You know, so if anyone rejects us, whether it be a parent or a romantic relationship, it's where we hurt the most is through rejection. You know, it's kind of an act of loss. And to not feel rejection intensely is abnormal. Everyone feels it to some extent. And so, even if the relationship turns out to be a good one, it might be months down the line where that pang of rejection might come and you'd say, well, why didn't you stay? Or was I not enough for you? And lots of children will describe, even in parental separation and things like that, that they didn't think they were enough to keep their parents around. And that's it's just an incredibly difficult experience to try and manage, and one that you'd need. And rather than being in a good place in your life, having lots of support around you to remind you of your enoughness would be really, really important in that situation. It is about having a really tight support network around you before engaging in something like that.
Okay.
I think it's probably really helpful. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Coleman, okay, so you've made the decision then. The parent agrees to meet. What are good things to talk about? And what could maybe wait a while? Like, how do you start? Yeah. Would you have tips, or what should you avoid in a first meeting like that?
Well, I would encourage, we always used to talk about letter writing before, but emails or Facebook Messenger or whatever, that you have some dialogue before you meet, you know, rather than, you know, I would think that'd be really important that you'd have some knowledge of each other. But it's really important, like, intimacy, Jen, is the mutual disclosure of information. So I tell you something about myself, you tell me something, and over time, intimacy develops. In a relationship like that, you almost expect intimacy to be there from the start. And it won't be. So I wouldn't go in with the big questions or the important things right off. I would try and develop the relationship first and then ask those bigger questions. Because the issue is that if you ask them straight away, you'll just get defensive, dismissive answers, which you won't feel satisfied by. But in order to create intimacy, we have to give it time. And so maybe when you meet first, it's a bit about the resume of your life story and where you went and what you, and likewise them sharing that with you, which is kind of just descriptive details. But getting into how you felt and how you feel now, I would always kind of hold off that until there's a rapport there that allows that to have a meaningful conversation, rather than, you know, if you, it's like if meeting someone on a first date and then you're throwing something at them, it's not going to work. You need the relationship first, then the intimacy, and then that mutual disclosure can take place.
Anyone in this situation is very likely to have a lot of kind of unresolved issues going in. So what are the chances that they're going to be solved by meeting a parent? Have you come across this? Oh, they're not. Okay.
No, no. I mean, those feelings stay with you. And a feeling doesn't go away just because of an encounter. But what it can do is you can reframe experiences. So if you've heard a story that your dad was this dreadful guy who left your mom and, you know, when you were very young, blah, 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 and when you get to meet him as an adult, he turns out not to be that person. Maybe he's not that person anymore, or maybe he's changed, or maybe that was just a story that you were told. That can resolve and you can have a much more healthy relationship, but it doesn't change the fact that the first 25, 30 years of your life, you lived with that belief that was influencing your relationship with other men or whatever it might be. You know, so it's not that you can undo it, but you can reframe it to the point of saying, well, that's now that itch I have scratched and I don't have that anymore, which is good. But it may bring with it another set of questions that you might have that you didn't expect to have, if that makes any sense. Very rare we have an encounter that solves everything for us. I always say, like, mental health problems are always an accumulation of things. It's very rarely just one thing. And the answer is always an accumulation of things. It's very rarely one thing as well. So, you know, it's, even if you had a good relationship with your dad that you just met, you still have that anger that maybe the four relationships that you had before broke down because of that relationship, or because of the way in which you were, the lens with which you saw the world up to that point. So it's really complex. And I wouldn't have an expectation that I meet this person and every part of my unconscious emotional life is solved. It certainly won't be. But maybe some of it will be kind of better and reframed, but it may indeed offer you more questions than even you had before you met them.
Somebody just texted in saying it's so complex. I wasn't adopted, but my dad left. I met him 25 years later, and that was our first conversation. So just to finish up, have you advice for anyone listening thinking of reaching out to a parent later in life and they've had no relationship with before? What would you say to them?
The first thing I'd say is only do it if you want to do it. I wouldn't be pressured into it by other people, and I wouldn't be pressured against it by other people. If it's something you really want to do, do it. The second thing is manage your expectations going into it. You know, this is a complete and utter, you know, unknown, and the answer will be unknown. And so, you know, expect that. But it's also, the last thing I'd say, it's okay to feel two competing emotions at the same time, having incredible love for someone and incredible anger and frustration, to be bitter but to be relieved, all of those things, that ambivalence is part of the human condition. So accept that you might feel the two things at the same time, and that's okay.
Great advice, Colman. Thank you so much for joining me today to talk about a very complex topic. There we go. That was psychotherapist Colman Nochter.